I'm Nick Harvey Doyle, an Anawan man from the northern tablelands of New South Wales. The Yarn podcast is made on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung, and Bunurong people. We'd like to acknowledge First Nations people as the first storytellers. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
From the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne, this is The Yarn. I'm Thomas Phillips. Social media feeds can make Botox and fillers seem as commonplace as getting a haircut. On TikTok alone, videos with the plastic surgery hashtag have 22 billion views. Is this newfound acceptance democratizing beauty, or making beauty obligatory? And who gets to decide what counts as beautiful? This week, we're bringing you stories about our increasingly narrow beauty standards. It's the second episode of Not Natural, a series about our ability to control nature. These stories were produced for the Science Gallery's new exhibition, Not Natural. It's open now and includes a listening station where you can hear work from our students. First up, Jessica Chong on the Australian woman altering their looks at younger and younger ages.
It's no doubt that the pressures of our society's beauty standards have had an increasingly negative effect on today's youth, making them more insecure about their appearances due to the media that they're consuming on a daily basis.
Hi, my name is Bella Yui, and I had my first plastic surgery when I was 15 years old.
My name is Lucy Hammond, and I got lip filler when I was 17.
Individuals are getting cosmetic surgery done at increasingly younger ages, even as minors. But in order to find the root of this plastic surgery epidemic, we need to go back to the start.
I think I'm society's standard of beautiful now, but when I was younger, I was definitely not beautiful.
When I was younger, I always saw that influencers and celebrities usually had big lips, so I wanted to fit that. I lacked confidence, so that's my main reason for getting it.
Cosmetic surgery is a deeply personal decision. However, as Bella recounts, it can impact your relationship with yourself and others.
I feel like my family doesn't consider me as their child, just because in pictures we look so different and I don't look fully Asian anymore. I feel a little bit regretful in the way that I won't be able to look like my family anymore.
We all feel inadequate sometimes, and the demands of social media to lead a perfect life make that even worse.
It's such a common thing nowadays, you know, everyone's doing it. Nearly every woman that you see when you cross the street is going to have some sort of plastic surgery. It's just the new norm now.
Since I got my surgery, I was treated a lot better by a lot of my peers, and I've never had that treatment before I got my surgery.
The idea of beauty can be one that's arguably ambiguous. After all, as the saying goes, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. However, as an Asian Australian, Bella has experienced adversity in the form of bullying due to her ethnic features in a Eurocentric environment.
I actually went to an international school that was predominantly with white kids. So when I was younger, especially at the ages from like 10 to 15, I was bullied a lot for how my nose is so flat. I think beauty is something that is defined by society. But to me, beauty is being able to feel happy from what you look at in the mirror.
People decide what's in fashion, and it's always changing, so you can just have to do your best to try and fit in.
I think for someone at 15 years old considering plastic surgery, you have to decide for yourself if it's going to be good for you in the long run and in the future. The term pretty privilege is really strong in my life, just because before I was pretty, I was nobody.
That was Jessica Chong. Height bias is rampant on dating apps and social media, and some men are taking drastic measures to boost their natural stature. In our next story, Zirin Jose learns about cosmetic limb lengthening.
5'10".
Anything over like 5'10".
5'10
and above. 5'10 is a good height.
5'11.
6'4".
6'3".
If this is the standard for men, what does it mean for the guys who fall below?
I wouldn't say I'm happy, but I wouldn't say I'm sad either. I've come to terms with how tall I am at this point. I still wish I was taller.
What if there was a way to make that wish come true? Thanks to cosmetic limb lengthening, Denzel Seegers grew from 5'5" to 6'.
I've always wanted to be taller. I've Googled ways to get taller since I was a kid. All the ways I tried were temporary. I was one of the shortest men in my family and among most of my friend groups. I hated it. Whether people accept it or not, there are also more benefits to life as a taller man. But there was one moment I regretted. One, this is my first surgery I've ever had in my life. When I woke up from the first surgery, it was definitely in the top five pains I've ever felt in my entire life. I've never had surgery before. I woke up, there's this big metal device sticking out of my leg, and there are prongs that go through my leg into a nail inside of my leg. It was extremely painful. Everything was swollen. You try to stand up, your legs are just in shock. That was definitely the one moment I regretted. But then I just told myself, like, no, you'll get over it. It'll pay off in the end. And I got over it. My confidence only has gone up more. So I've had a total of 4 surgeries now. All the bones in my leg are broken. So my femur, my tibia, and my fibula. It's been 3 weeks since I got the device removed. And I just started walking without support like 2 days ago. It's so mentally demanding. It's a very painful process. I think it's more mental than anything. If you could take the pain for a couple days, you could take the pain for a few months. That's how I see it. I want to improve on myself every single day. I don't care what people say. I want to be the best version of myself, and I've considered height a part of that.
With his dream height and legs full of broken bones, the question that still remains is limb lengthening even safe? To get more information, I spoke with Dr. Stuart Morrison, an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in limb lengthening.
Bone is really good at healing. People break bones all the time, but they heal. And we harness that process when we're doing limb lengthening. So we gently break the bone. It starts to make that fluffy new bone. Then we draw it a pass 1 millimeter per day. And then after 4 weeks, 5 weeks, you have 2-3 centimeters of bone. As long as there's no complications, the bone that grows is just as strong, just as mobile, and exactly the same as it was before. Where I sit with stature lengthening in people without medical reasons, treating someone very unhappy with their body image and their height, lengthening them doesn't actually solve their underlying problem. That needs to be managed in a different way. So for me to ever consider stature lengthening, I'd need to make sure someone had had appropriate counselling and appropriate psychiatric involvement.
That was Ziran Jose. Our next story is about the parallels between dental health and mental health. Kel Tai reports on smile dysmorphia.
Now everybody say cheese!
I took IGCSE drama, and so it is extremely important to have a good smile.
Jay often finds it hard to pull off roles that require him to smile naturally.
I think I was not blessed with a good dental appearance. My teeth were all over the place. I had missing teeth. It's not properly lined up. When I first did drama, I absolutely hated the fact that I had to smile or I had to basically show my teeth because I was concerned about my dental appearance. It dramatically limited my confidence, and so does my acting.
When it comes to orthodontics, braces, it's very important in terms of the psychological effect. With crooked teeth, you can still eat, you can chew food, except for some extreme cases.
That was Dr. Brian Chu, who has 16 years of dentistry practice in Houston, Texas.
But to correct the teeth really boosts the confidence level to go out there and smile and talk freely. A lot of people have crooked teeth. They don't want to smile. And for female, they try to cover up their mouth when they laugh.
Since I was a little girl, well, my mom always told me, well, you need to have a pretty smile where every teeth is supposed to be even and it's supposed to be white. I had braces on for 3 years, then whitened it 3 to 4 times.
I was very insecure about my look up to a point where I developed
is forming in my face. Even after I took off my braces, I looked better, but I could never recover from that.
I am actually quite satisfied with my smile. It looks, I gotta say, natural, not too white. And also, like, the teeth is just even, I guess.
When I smile, not all of my teeth are showcases, which gives me an ache. If possible, I would like to cut parts of my gum so that more teeth can be exposed.
Body dysmorphia have been increasingly concerning yet overlooked within dentistry. Contributing to one of the few research papers regarding this issue in 2018, let's hear what Professor Carolina Rodriguez and Professor Roy Judge from the Melbourne Dental School got to add upon this problem.
With body dysmorphia, the key is the perceived imperfection or flaw and how much distress to your life is causing.
So as a population, we can't all look or should look like a homogeneous endpoint. Humans can be tall, short, wide, slim. They're all normal.
What I think that people don't really understand is that because if something is cosmetic, it's not really and truly a medical procedure, so they view it as a more innocuous or with less risk.
That was Kel Tai. Most of us endure an awkward acne phase, but for some, this condition is severe enough to warrant risky drugs with a slew of side effects. Sabina Lynch investigates whether this trade-off is worth it.
My mom always told me, like, not to pop my pimples.
Cutting down on dairy and drinking more water.
I tried washing my face twice a day. Wash your hands before you touch your face.
I also changing my pillowcase every night.
I bought a silk pillowcase.
Approximately 85% of people aged 12 to 24 experience at least minor acne. But for some, it is much more severe, leading to prescription medications such as Roaccutane.
At one point in high school, my face hurt so much, like it hurt to touch, and it was like so inflamed. I tried a lot of different like brands, like Proactive, CeraVe, Neutrogena. Before I got prescribed to Accutane. I got put on Accutane for my hormonal acne and I really had to beg my parents to be put on it. But my self-esteem was really low and I just didn't feel confident in myself.
When my skin got worse on my back, it was just super uncomfortable in the gym and like you'd lean back in chairs and it just hurt. So just when it started like actually being painful, that's when I decided to just make the jump.
That's Sasha, Amy and Henry, who have all been on Roaccutane for over 3 months now. The drug, officially called isotretinoin, is a retinoid, prescribed in what are deemed severe cases of acne, as it comes with extensive risks and side effects.
It dries out my face and skin and lips so much, like my lips are constantly chapped and dry, like I have to put so much moisturizer on.
Chafed lips and really dry skin and then somewhat dry eyes.
So the main ones I was told was there was a high risk of depression.
I mean, I'm made aware of tons of like the mental health, the depression and anxiety. Apparently you can get sore bones, headaches, pressure in the skull, decreased night visions. You couldn't be a pilot if it gets bad.
Despite these major risks, many view the medication as worthwhile when more natural remedies such as topical treatments or lifestyle changes have failed.
I feel like I would take having like this dry skin instead of having like all the acne that I had before. Like it's definitely worth it for like the short term. Overall, I would say it is worth it. Like I feel much more comfortable in my skin now. But at the beginning, I really hated it because my skin was just breaking out more.
I think it's worthwhile overall for me so far since I haven't had any bad side effects. But I think that would change if I did have more bad side effects from it. But at the moment, I think it's worthwhile because it hasn't inconvenienced me too much.
That was Sabina Lynch. A massive thank you to producers Jessica Chong, Ziren Jose, Kel Tai, and Sabina Lynch. The Yarn is from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne. It's produced on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Our executive producer is Louisa Lim. I'm Thomas Phillips. See you next week.